play, be playful with the music and the ideas, right? Just don't do it the way it's, you know, it's supposed to be, or you think, you know, it should go, or if you know too much music theory the way that you're supposed to do it, right? Just play, make it feel right to you.
Hilliard, today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by your future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Ooh, make a better each day now, baby. Ooh, better in every way.
Our guest is Jeff Lizowitz, the author of Not Effing Around, the No Bullshit Guide for Getting Your Creative Dreams Off the Ground. Jeff, he burns with a mission to inspire writers, artists, musicians, filmmakers, entrepreneurs, and everyone else to amp up their creativity and heal their hearts and shine the world.
That's right. Yeah. So, hey, you're in Seattle.
I am in Seattle. So are you, right?
Yeah, I'm just up near Green Lake. How about you?
Yeah, well, technically I'm not in Seattle. I'm in Mukilteo.
I like the Mukilteo.
It's all right. You know, Mukilteo means happy camper.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so I was going through QFC, and I ran into a stranger, and I said, are you a happy camper here in Mukilteo? And they said, no. So I figured maybe it's not true.
Okay. So,
Jeff, how do you pronounce your last name? I don't want to blow it.
Well, you won't be the first or the last to blow it, but it's Lizowitz.
Okay, Lizowitz, that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. I listened to another interview, and that's how he pronounced it. But that doesn't always mean, you know, sometimes the guest is so polite, they just let you call you anything you want.
Call me whatever you want. It's fine.
No, let's stick with your name. The Jeff right. part I got.
Yep, that's easy.
So tell me about your book, Not Effing Around, the No Bullshit Guide for Getting Your Creative Dream Off the Ground. What inspired that? And that sounds like a huge undertaking.
Yeah, well, I've spent a lot of time, you know, getting my creative dreams off the ground. I've always been quite the creative, you know, guy, the weird, friendless kid as a child. Been into music, photography, writing, filmmaking, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, the book just sort of came almost out of nowhere. It was one weekend morning, just went to my local coffee shop and sort of got jacked on the caffeine and started writing as I usually do, whether it's a screenplay or journaling or poetry or stories or whatever. And I just kind of wrote something. I was like, huh, this is, you know, a sort of powerful message. Maybe I should write a book about it. You know, so I did.
Makes sense.
I didn't really think a whole lot about it. And because I'd been, I've been living this my whole life, it really wasn't that difficult for me to write. I mean, it took a while, of course. But I sort of knew what I was doing and wanted to talk about. So yeah, that's where it came from.
Sounds a little bit like, I should read it. You heard me talking about the podcast before the conversation started here, and yeah, it sounds like it would apply. And I find myself kind of giving out information like that to people, and I don't really know that I'm worthy of being a counselor on that. But I think if I read your book, I'm going to get some insights from it, definitely.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. So yeah, I've been, besides the songwriter and all this and that, I mean, I've had a pretty solid career as a musician. I won an award, Best Independent Electronic Artist in the World in 2000. I've had thousands of placements on film and TV, made records, produced other artists. I'm currently teaching songwriting at a college in Tacoma, which is just an hour south of here for our friends not in the Seattle area.
Yes.
And on the other side, you know, I've been and I am a life coach, and I practice something called NLP. That's neuro-linguistic repatterning, which is a sort of fringy kind of psychology that helps people untangle their subconscious blocks, because I believe that a huge amount of what drives us, we aren't even aware of. And if you're not aware of it, you can't really change it. And if you can't change it and it's not helping you, you're sort of driving, you know, off the cliff sometimes. So we don't want that.
You go into a topic of time travel with your future self.
Yeah.
Elaborate. Yeah, that sounds so interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, the normal human view of time is, you know, yesterday was then, now the moment, and the future's coming, that kind of thing. And clearly that's sort of how it works, right? I mean, that's what it seems like anyway to us as humans. But I really believe that you can almost short-circuit that a little bit. And if you can project with a lot of power and clear intention and emotional energy into the future, it almost draws the future to you. So knowing what you want and tuning into that and revving it up with real energy can help you align with the future that you desire. So that's sort of what that's about.
You hear of athletes using that technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by the way, it's not, you know, I am sort of the woo-woo kind of guy in a lot of ways, but I'm also the scientist in a lot of ways too. And there is tons and tons of data that prove, not suggest, but prove that visualizations like this work. Like it's not, you know, it's not a game. It's not a little thing. You really do this and it will work.
I love where science kind of starts leaving off and then it kind of becomes, well, I don't know, is it spiritual at this point? Are there neurons in your digestive tract when you have a gut feeling, that kind of stuff? You know, it's kind of a new territory.
It is. And, you know, we're understanding things in different ways here as humans these days. I mean, science is a huge deal. Obviously, it's gotten us this far. And it's also screwed us up this far, too, by
the
way.
Yeah, I like the Murphy's Law. I don't even know if it's a Murphy's Law. It could be my law. Anyway, whoever invented it, when they die, it's going to be mine. So I'm going with it.
Yeah.
But you solve one problem and you cause two more. What kind of music do you write?
It's everything from, you know, sort of quiet acoustic stuff to rock and funkiness, lots of electronic, not necessarily the banging, you know, sort of dance beats, although I've done some of that. It's more mid-tempo or even down-tempo, minor grooves, you know, that kind of thing. But the one thing that I hope links it all together is an authenticity, a connection to the heart, really. And that's a lot of what I talk about in my workshops and coaching. We get a little sometimes caught up in the mind rather than the heart. And I think music is, it's about the heart. It's about communicating emotion and feeling. And sometimes we tend to get away from that. We think about it too much. That's something I'm constantly teaching my songwriting students at college. They're like really sort of brainy about it because they're learning so much about, you know, music theory and all that. And of course that's great. But if you're not feeling it, nobody else is either.
Somebody taught me early on, yeah, learn the scales, learn all that stuff, learn the names and what to call stuff so you can articulate it to other people and then forget it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That was some of the best advice. Do you find people say, I want to learn to play an instrument? It's usually guitar in my case, but I can't read music.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's lots of ways to play music. And by the way, I don't read music. I'm a freaking college professor, and I've had a long and successful history, you know, in the music biz. So you don't need to read music. And actually, if you, you know, went back in history and said, okay, let's take the top, I don't know, 500 musicians or bands or artists or whatever, I'd actually be really interested to see how many of them read music. I bet it's not that many, actually.
I am with you 100%, and I tell people, well, the Beatles didn't read a lot of music. Maybe later on, in order to, again, articulate it to somebody else, like a French horn player who probably doesn't know how to ad lib very well.
Right.
And if you say blues scale or 12-bar blues, you know, 30 years ago, he'd look at you like, I don't know what that is. because all I did is mom told me I was going to play French horn, and that's what I do. And all I do is read. So, yeah, in order to communicate with an orchestra, it used to be that way. And I'm thinking probably not so much anymore. What do you think?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different kinds of musicians out there and interests in the way their minds work. And, yeah, some people just want to read it off the page and know theory and, you know, hey, that's great. And other people, you know, you get the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, you know, four chords and the truth. You know, that's all you need.
In two minutes and 30 seconds, loud and fast tempo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah.
They don't have to think about it. When I was in college, which was in the late 70s, I had played in rock bands. So I went off to Washington State University and went in the music department. They didn't really have a guitar program. They had lots of stuff. And, you know, if you have a library and some professors, you can't go wrong. As long as you're listening and applying yourself, it's good. But they really didn't. I was weird. I was like this hippie rock guitar player guy. And I'm really not of that ilk too much. But compared to the French horn player that played in the closet that can't ad lib or doesn't know what tel barbouze is. Yeah, that was the case. And it sounds like it's really changed. And I think it's people like you that are coming up with, you're kind of paving a new path, I think.
Well, just, you know, again, doing what feels right, expressing the truth in the ways that I know how. And really, you know, these days for me, it's a lot more about teaching stuff, you know, getting songwriters or helping songwriters to understand what music is really all about. You know, it's not about the fame and the fortune, although, hey, that's great. Although when you look at artists who have had a lot of fame and fortune, many of them are miserable. So I don't think that's necessarily the best goal. Mm-hmm. What I figured out over time in writing this book and doing my workshops and stuff is the creativity in songwriting is in many ways a method or a way for us to be seen, expressed, and healed. So what do I mean by that? To be seen in this world, you know, it is really easy to sort of feel anonymous. There's a million people running around everywhere, on the streets, online, all that. And even with our closer friends and family, coworkers, whatever, it's, you know, hopefully they get us to some extent, but a lot of times, you know, sort of maybe they don't really get you, understand you. So it's a way to be seen. Being expressed to me means that, you know, you're actually doing the thing. You're actually writing music or performing music. So, you know, my example on that is like a dancer who's sitting in the corner while the music's playing in that moment is not really a dancer. Okay. As soon as he or she steps on that floor and starts shaking it, then yeah, they're expressed in that moment. So that's the seen and the expressed and then the healed. So through our songwriting, through our various creative activities, right? There's a healing process that certainly goes on. It that, you know, the pain, the tragedy, the trauma, whatever, comes out of you. And I think we've all experienced that in some ways, but it's actually even a little bit deeper. Besides that kind of catharsis, I believe that the healing in music can also be a little more sublime. So let's say you write a love song, okay? And of course, there's a million love songs out there, but you write your love song, and where's the healing in that? Well, my opinion, I guess, is that it is the healing of all the loneliness and all the sorrow and heartbreak that came before that love song. So there's the healing in that. So if you are seen, expressed, and healed through your songwriting, through your music, whatever, then you can give that gift of your music to the world. And here's where it gets even cooler. Once you do that, you actually become the gift, okay? Because when you're seen, expressed, and healed, give the gift of your creativity to the world, you are showing others that it is possible for them to be seen, expressed, and healed. And that is a big deal. And if we get more people in the world doing that, the world will light up with, you know, just goodness and love and creativity and just bigger, better planet and society. And I mean, we can use that, obviously.
Jeff's utopian world of creativity. I like it.
Yeah, I think that's where I want to live.
Well,
yeah,
I think you're 100% spot on that. What instruments do you play?
Well, I play bass guitar and guitar, mostly, you know, sort of rhythm. And I program drums and synthesizers. So, you know, you get that in a studio and enough plugins and you can do a lot of stuff.
Tons of stuff.
As it turns out.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
What kind of recording equipment are you using?
I've got Pro Tools on a Mac, a little Focusrite interface, you know, a bunch of plugins, stuff like that. It's really not too fancy around here. You know, that's another thing that I see so many of my students and just musicians in general. It's really easy to get sucked into the gear and the plugins and all that kind of stuff. And hey, that's great. And the production is great. You know, go for it. But the truth is in the song.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say one love, one life. What it's one need in the night. One love, we get to share it. But it leaves you, baby, if you don't care for it. Did I disappoint you? Or leave a bad taste in your mouth? You act like you never had love, and you want me to go without. Well, it's too late tonight to drag the past out into the light. We're one, but we're not the same. Yeah, we carry each other. Jesus, to all the lepers in your head. Did I ask too much, more than lie? You gave me nothing, now it's all I got. We're one, but we're not the same. Yeah, we hurt each other, then we do it again. Sisters and brothers, one life.
years ago when I was in college, I met this guitar player, and this guy had the most piece of shit guitar, you know, I'd ever seen pretty much at that point.
Does it matter?
Doesn't matter. Yeah. He played that thing, and I was like, oh my God, yeah. You know, this thing that he's making it sing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you plug it in and get a decent amp and tune it up right. And it's like, wow, like that's something. So, you know,
I've always told a good musician can make music with a stick, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't need anything fancy.
Don't get too sucked into the gear.
Always have a, I don't have enough stuff syndrome too. I find if I go to Guitar Center and look around, oh yeah, I want that, and I want that, and I want that, and then I keep asking myself why. Start with why, Bruce.
Exactly.
Because I just want one because I'm a good guy. No. Learn how to play better.
Yeah, it's cool and fun. Hey, write 10 songs and then you can buy it. You know.
I do a lot of things for free.
Right. You know, it took me a long time to figure this out, both for myself and others that I was collaborating with. The deal is, you know, pay people you collaborate with, right? If it's your project, you know, if it's a group project, okay, that's different maybe. But, you know, I'm making a film this summer, and I'm like, I am paying everyone a fair rate for what they're doing on here because I value what they're doing, and I wouldn't want to work for free. You know, So let's bring it. And the same thing holds true for ourselves. What value do we have, you know, within ourselves? And this is something that I write about and talk about. It's a huge thing. And, you know, I think musicians especially sort of have this. They want to share their gifts so much. But at the same time, you got to watch out and like, just let the world know that you have value. You're not going to play that gig for free. You're not going to, you know, do that work for free, whatever it is. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's hard to ask for money. You enjoy the work so much that you do it for free, but probably shouldn't because you need to eat, pay for your room and board, and those kind of things.
Well, I just had a very interesting experience. This is actually in progress. I got a call from an ad agency asking me to do an audio prompt. I'm like, what the hell is an audio prompt? It's one of those like literally two second pieces of sound or music where, you know, a brand connects it to a video or a logo, right? Like, you know, Intel, da-da-da-da,
okay.
You know, yeah. Something like that, right? So they're like, so what's your bid on that? And I'm like, really 2 seconds worth of music? You know, so I thought about it, and you know, it was obviously going to go back and forth with the client a bunch of times and stuff like that. But I came up with a number, and I talked to my friend about it, who's sort of in the biz a little bit more, and you know, advertising. And he's like, no, way too low. Do not devalue yourself. I ended up getting, are you ready?
Cook for it.
5 times more than I originally was gonna, you know, bid on the project. 5 times more. So do not undervalue yourself, musicians and producers, please. You can do something that most of the world cannot do.
So it could be something that sounds like, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I want $100,000 for that.
Yeah, well, sorry, it's not that much. I wish.
Well, I'm thinking big now. You've inspired me. Any advice to, what do you tell your students, upcoming students? What's the number one good piece of advice you could give someone?
Play, be playful with the music and the ideas, right? Just don't do it the way it's, you know, it's supposed to be, or you think, you know, it should go, or if you know too much music theory, the way that you're supposed to do it, right? Just play, make it feel right to you and dig deep with the lyrics. The, you know, lyrics that oftentimes come out first are not really the best. I sometimes assign homework for like, okay, write this chorus, write the lines and the melody, the lyrics and the melody for this chorus 5 times, 5 completely different choruses over the same music. and then we'll decide which one's the best. Right? And it's not the first one, and it's not the last one. It's usually 2, 3, or 4.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. We stop too early, too easy a lot of times.
Good advice.
Again, the book, Not Effing Around, The No Bullshit Guide for Getting Your Creative Dreams Off the Ground. I do workshops around Seattle and online, also private coaching. So, you know, you can get in touch. I'll do a 15-minute complimentary session with you to see if it's a good fit. You can just sign up there on the website. And also, just come onto the website and sign up, and you'll get 3 free chapters of the ebook sent right to you, downloaded to your magic hard drive.
Well, that is awesome, Jeff. And say hello to Green Lake for me.
I will.
It's a nice little walk around there. What is it, about 3 miles?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Jeff.
listening to the Better Each Day Podcast Radio Show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.